We're going to start the meeting. We don't have a quorum yet, and we have the governor's supplemental budget request. First, we're going to hear from the Department of Health, then from the Department of Human Services, then finally from the Department of Finance to cover the budget items that are related to this committee. So if we could start with Mr. Acom, is the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Health. And you should all have the handouts. So if you could, when you talk, just give your name at the start so the tape can pick up who's talking.
Mr. Chair, my name is Margaret Kelly, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Health, and thank you for the opportunity to come before your committee today and talk about the governor's supplemental budget recommendations that pertain to your committee. With me is Craig Acom, our Chief Financial Officer, and he's going to walk you through the few items that pertain to your committee.
Thank you. Good morning, or good afternoon, excuse me, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Acom. I would call your attention to the handout in your packet labeled Agency Operations Reductions from the Minnesota Department of Health. And I'll be walking through that. Most of our budget change items in the governor's supplemental budget actually are in the purview of Representative Clark's committee, but a few are in the purview of this committee, Mr. Chair, and I'll be focusing primarily on those. I would just start off by saying that in January, state agencies were given direction by the governor's office and the Department of Finance to look for reductions in both their grant programs and their agency operating budgets in light of the November forecast. And the agency spent some time walking through our general fund budget and looking at these different items. And I can tell you that there's no easy choices when you have to reduce. The choices that are reflected here are not indicative of the value of these programs to the department or to public health, nor of their effectiveness in achieving their program goals. Generally, these reductions are more reflective of the fact that these grant programs in particular either received additional funding in the last legislative session when we thought that in the current biennium there would be additional funding to fund new programs, or there was some other change in the legislative session that affected these grant programs specifically. And so I would call your attention to the grant program specific to this committee, the community-based healthcare demonstration grant, which the governor is proposing to be eliminated. And this program was a five-year demonstration grant created in the last session, in essence working with Carlson, Cook, Lake, and St. Louis County to offer individuals the option of purchasing healthcare coverage on a fixed prepaid basis without meeting the usual state health insurance requirements. I'm certainly aware, Mr. Chair, of your support for this program. Basically,
you got my attention right away.
I'm painfully aware of that. So, but it's a new program. It was something that we started when we thought the budget had the capacity to do this. It's certainly important work, but in light of the current deficit facing us in this biennium, we're recommending that the program be eliminated in order to meet our responsibilities to balance the budget. The other item specific to this committee's purview would be on the back page. And the other piece of the governor's budget is that in general he asked most of the executive branch state agencies and even other branches of government to take a 4% reduction in their administrative operations budget. And for the Department of Health, that amounts to a $1.1 million reduction in 2009 and a $1.054 million reduction in our base budget thereafter. And we have not yet determined how we will make those cuts, but we will be working on that in the coming months and determining what exactly that might mean to the agency. Otherwise, the rest of the agency reductions, and then we also have some state government special revenue appropriation requests, are really under the purview of Representative Clark's committee, so I'd be happy to answer any questions about any aspects of our budget that you might have.
Mr. Acomb, the base budget, the 4% reduction, it looks like that's going to cost you 15 FTEs. Is that people that vacancies that won't be filled, or is it laying off people?
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure I can answer that question at this time. We really only became aware of the full value of that impact for our agency really within the last week. Certainly the February forecast kind of framed the true size of the budget problem. And so our 4% reduction, we just haven't had time to kind of analyze what that'll mean. The language has been here talking about reductions and restructuring and possible elimination of positions and services is really just our best guess to kind of say it's going to impact us. This is a significant portion of our operations. It's going to be painful in some ways, but we're not exactly sure how we're going to make those reductions.
Okay, any questions for Representative Broad?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the back page of your handout, and when you talk about, when it talks about how the cuts would be dealt with, you talk about reductions, restructuring, elimination of services, but I'm just wondering, related to reform and efficiencies and making sure that the department is operating in the most efficient manner possible, why some of those things aren't included in possibilities for how you would deal with any deficits or cuts.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, those are certainly the components that we would look at. But I would venture to say, too, that our agency in particular and state agencies perhaps in general have seen a decline in budgets really over the last 8 years. And we've worked hard to achieve those efficiencies and find those reductions and cost savings. I would say that there's certainly probably always going to be room for improvement, but for the most part, I think that a lot of that has been achieved.
All right, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'm not seeing it here, but can you give me a, maybe not today, but can you give me then a five-year budget for your department and how that's declined over that time in real dollars? You know, we hear about declines, and I just want to take a look at the trend line.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Acomb.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rod, we'd certainly be happy to provide that information.
Thank you.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Acomb, a couple of notations I made in regard to budget reductions. Evaluation of conferences and travel, will that be on the table?
Mr. Acomb.
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly. I think we're trimming those things as we speak. Right now, all of the executive branch agencies under hiring restrictions, for example. Certainly, there's greater scrutiny on travel, on professional contracts,
mm-hmm.
On other kinds of expenses. I would say that all those things are being looked at.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the second item I wrote down was redundancy. Though I can't pinpoint off the top of my head some of the redundancy in some of the programs, I hope that you will look for those so that we're not repeating the same thing in, you know, multiple programs, that we try to focus in on what is needed in that program, and if it's picked up in another, that's a place you could make a reduction. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What does it mean that that it's not fully, that the community-based healthcare demonstration project not before it's fully implemented. Has work started on it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beeson, it was a five-year grant program that was appropriated in this year. I would say that the nonprofit organization up in northeastern Minnesota is really just getting started, trying to establish itself and set up the program, and so it really hasn't gotten off the ground yet.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I heard you say in your opening remarks that the fact that these things were cut was not an indication of their effectiveness. And that brings up the question for me, did you look at things that aren't effective? I mean, it seems here when we're cutting things like, you know, programs for fetal alcohol syndrome reduction and, you know, things for youth tobacco, we're just, you know, exchanging a little savings today for maybe a huge cost tomorrow. Can you address that?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling. When I made that remark, I should qualify it that we certainly always look at what's effective and what isn't effective. And if any of our programs aren't effective, we're the first to want to reallocate or redirect those dollars and those resources to what's in the best interest for public health. When we are making reductions to the fetal alcohol syndrome grant, really that in that particular program, they received a funding increase in the last session as a result of what we thought was a budget surplus in this biennium. It seemed that what was most appropriate was to reduce that back to its original funding level. And so we're not impacting those programs. We're just, in essence, sort of removing an increase in funding where we had previously thought that that would be available to us to use.
Representative Murphy, we're going to have to keep this short because the much smaller cuts are coming up in the other department later. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. I'm just looking at the Minnesota Youth Tobacco Prevention Initiative cuts, and we have made significant strides in Minnesota, I think in great part to some of the work that's happened and came to fruition last session. But we know that the tobacco industry is very busy targeting particularly young people 18 to 25, and I'm wondering how you will continue to monitor our success in preventing youth access if we're cutting money from the budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, thank you for your question. I would say that the $325,000 reduction from this grant program still leaves over $3.2 million that's going out in grants to organizations working on that very issue. And this reduction from the overall grant amount is really just a reflection of the fact that we needed to make some reductions. And we thought that some progress had been made since this program was initiated in 1999, and particularly given the legislature's passage of the Freedom to Breathe Act last session. We think that those are significant accomplishments toward that goal. And so this seemed like an opportunity to make a reduction there.
Representative Loeffler, we're going to have to be brief.
Just very briefly, Mr. Chair, and to our witness, I just remind the committee that this is youth tobacco use, so hopefully they're not in the bars at that age, and that there is evidence back from previous times when we just continued our efforts at addressing this in the schools and in the community that we actually saw use of tobacco going up. So I think that's a potential consequence of this.
Okay, well, thank you to the Health Department for presenting your budget, and actually the only one that affects this committee is Representative Huntley's bill.
my apologies, Mr. Chair. So thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, next we'll have Tim Wilkin, Assistant Commissioner from the Department of Human Services. And welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Tim Wilkin, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to present Governor Pawlenty's supplemental budget. While the Governor's supplemental budget for the Department of Human Services recommends reductions in certain programs in administrative areas, it is important to note that it does not cut current eligibility or benefits for current enrollees. In addition, the budget recommendations do not cut rates currently received by providers, with the exception of a small cut to pharmacy rates that brings them in line with current commercial market rates. However, we will take programmatic and administrative reductions to help balance the state budget. While administrative reductions may present a challenge for the department, we believe we can manage our way through in a thoughtful manner. Members, I would call your attention to the summary document that is Governor's Supplemental Budget. It's a six-page document. We'll start on 1 and 6 and work our way through. The first five items are all federal compliance items. The first federal compliance item is child support assignment and distribution. And with the federal law change, we're now required to change and discontinue assignment of pre-assistance arrears in new public assistance cases. There's also an optional piece for current enrollees in public assistance, and we will take that option too, because we treat them evenly then, both the new enrollees and the current enrollees, and it actually helps keep our system costs lower. The second item of federal compliance is medical assistance cost sharing. And this is required by the Federal Tax Relief and Health Care Act of 2006, which limits cost sharing in Medicaid. A limit of 5% is applied to family income for co-pays and cost sharing for families at or below 100% of federal poverty guidelines. And by the way, on these federal compliance pieces, the cost of implementing these is being absorbed by the department as an addition to our 4% reduction in administrative costs, and we'll talk about that a little later. The next item is another federal compliance. This is Medicaid payments to public providers. The federal government is now requiring us to make sure that payments to public providers do not exceed the cost of services. We don't currently track the cost of all those services, so we have to implement an infrastructure to gather that data and analyze it and make sure that we're not paying them at a rate higher than their cost. The next item is federal compliance with new targeted case management.
Commissioner, if we could have a question from Representative.
Just on those cost-sharing limits, which has to do with premiums for people under 100% of poverty.
Yes.
Do you know how much it costs the department to actually administer the payment of those premiums?
We're absorbing about $199,000.
Not that part of it. I'm Mr. Chair. I mean, to actually do the premium. How much does it cost the department to collect the premiums?
It's all wrapped up in the systems and administrative costs, all in the one.
That's the change I'm talking about.
Okay, the provider is selecting the copay, so is that the part you're talking about?
Right, yeah.
It's not the department themselves that collects it, it's the provider, so we'll have to keep track of what the provider is collecting, see when the recipient hits their limit, and then we'll have to have a mechanism to make sure that anything that's collected over and above that limit is refunded to the enrollee.
And Mr. Chair, so there are some costs to the department to actually track who's paying premiums and where the premiums are going.
Yes.
And that's to collect $5. So that would be the maximum you could ever collect from somebody.
That'd be correct.
Okay. If we could get information on how much that actually costs the department to run that program, that would be helpful.
We'll get that to you.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Wilkins. I was wondering about the MA payments to public providers. You had said that you're going to actually have to develop a cost methodology to be able to prove to the public, to the feds, that you're paying above cost. And it's a wide range of providers listed here, hospitals, home health agencies, ICFMRs, day training. I assume, have you started a process for that? Are you involving these organizations in developing that methodology so we don't get the pushback that we're imposing new costs
entity, you know, recommendations on these and working within their existing accounting structures?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, just to clarify, too, is we can't pay above cost to public providers. We absolutely will work with the providers to establish this. If there are existing cost reports or mechanisms that we can use without recreating the wheel, so they have a second or third or fourth method of accounting that they have to use, we'll do our best to implement that, but we'll have to implement it within the framework of the federal law.
Commissioners, continue.
The next item is targeted case management regulation. There's new federal regulations that took effect on March 3rd. Those set new limits on targeted case management for residents of hospitals, nursing homes, and ICSMR. This proposal would simply reference federal rules without specifying the number of days allowed. The federal rules reduce the number of days this specific targeted case management is allowed, you know, and it'll affect both the counties and the state.
The Commissioner, would you know if, I know there's attempts in Congress to reverse that decision, but I don't know what the status of that is.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't have an update on the status of where things are at in Congress either. So.
Okay,
but we can get that to you if there's any updates.
Yeah, it's a huge cost to counties.
It's $1 million per year to counties. I stand corrected. That's one portion of the targeted case management. It is more than that, and we can get the details on those costs. The final item of federal compliance is repeal of the 2003 nursing home IGT. This was ruled disapproved by CMS, and on the appeal to the U.S. 8th Circuit Court, they upheld the CMS disapproval. This is budget neutral. The reason it's budget neutral is it's already been accounted for in the forecast. The next item is long-term homelessness. This is a language correction. At the end of last year, the appropriation and the rider did not match. This would give DHS the authority to use the $2 million appropriated in either year of the biennium so that we can make sure there's continuity in the program. The next item is a change to the MFIP work bonus that passed last year. This proposal changes it from a cash work bonus to a food work bonus. With the cash work bonus, there's a problem that the enrollees might not receive the full benefit of their cash benefit because the cash would be counted against them. But the food bonus would not have that issue, and it also there's a small change in the implementation date from I believe 10-1 to March 1, 2010. The next item is implementing Centers of Excellence. This would give the Health Services Advisory Council direction to advise DHS on designating criteria for Centers of Excellence. The Centers of Excellence is basically a concept that where they're recognized, healthcare facilities are recognized by an external organization for their commitment to the best possible patient outcomes. We're hopeful that in the long term this will provide a savings, but at this point we don't have enough documentation to convince the forecasters to include such savings in the forecast, so we can't. It's budget neutral at this point. Next item is the long-term care partnership fix. This takes out the exhaustion of benefits language. When you see the language for members of the committee that were here in prior years, I call it the Greenman 3.1 language. We stole your researcher from the DFL caucus, and he's working for us now. So he came up with the language. This fixes, removes the exhaustion of benefits language that's been viewed as anti-consumer and an impediment to additional market penetration, and it'll make sure that we try to take full advantage of long-term care partnership policies that are out there, take full advantage of the limits so that that burden of that money does not go on to the onto the state roll. The next item is American Indian Youth Treatment. This is a result of some funding that you passed last year for planning grants for the Leech Lake and White Earth tribes. There's currently a proposal where White Earth is looking to purchase a facility in Bemidji. Planning is still underway for the Leech Lake proposal, and this makes it a competitive grant and encourages collaborative efforts on behalf of the tribes and funds it at a level of $2 million. The next item is the budget reduction, the 4% general fund administrative budget reduction for the agency. And just to remind you, we're also absorbing $1.7 million in administrative costs with the federal compliance pieces that we discussed earlier. The next item is an account elimination. This is a no longer used Health Minnesota Care Outreach account. And in 2005, the appropriation and the authority to spend this money was removed. And during that same session, we took $1.14 million from the fund and put it into the general fund. This just takes care of the remainder and eliminates the fund. The next item is a chemical dependency treatment fund. We take 50% or about 50% of the fund, $2.5 million. And this balance is built up whenever the spending is less than anticipated in the forecast. We need to maintain the rest of it because that's where if we're over our appropriation in other programs, forecast programs, that's where we pay for it internally.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we're moving through these fairly quickly. So can you explain a little bit more what the CD treatment fund transfer is? This is an accounting transfer, or is this really reducing investments in treatment?
No, this does not cut treatment, Representative Loeffler. This is basically taking a fund balance or a partial fund balance to just grab one-time money. It does not cut services at all.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. On that same one, Mr. Chair, so this is state, county, and federal funding that's going into that account. Coming from where? What are the federal, first of all, the federal sources?
I believe that's matching grants or matching money from MA and some grants.
Matching money from MA, so it's not restricted to CD type work. Is that right?
Was MA that or CD treatment that would be covered by MA?
Yeah. Members, Barb Julich, Department of Human Services. The CD treatment fund resources include federal CD grants, a state appropriation, county shares, miscellaneous collection, and then any MA eligible reimbursement for activities. So.
And so, Mr. Chair, so that federal funding, though, is it specifically for CD?
Yes.
Well, we're not taking that piece of it. We're taking the piece that's on federal. Okay.
We're taking the.
So we're not violating
state,
federal laws.
Right. We're taking the state fund balance of that
okay.
account.
And the thing that, Mr. Chair, the thing that is confusing about this one is we've heard over and over how underfunded our chemical dependency programs are in the state of Minnesota, and that's. I'm just curious, if we're carrying this balance of $2.5 million, why that hasn't been previously invested in chemical dependency work?
Mr. Chair, members, in the past there used to be a Tier 2 funding of CD treatment that was eliminated. I don't know if it was in the 2003 session or somewhere around there. And in the past, when funds have accumulated to the CD fund, investment in Tier 2 could occur. But those Tier 2 programs no longer exist.
And Mr. Chair, the other piece of it, I think, is the maintenance of efforts at the local level that they're really struggling a lot with. And we hear over and over from the counties that that's one of their biggest unfunded mandates that we put on them. Was that taken into any consideration here?
We do not have a proposal dealing with that at this time.
Okay. And then if I could, just on the previous one, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to take up so much time.
Representative.
The outreach grant, so this is different than the outreach money that we allocated last year?
Yes.
Okay. And this is for Minnesota Healthcare Outreach Grants. Were these Minnesota Care, were these Health Care Access Fund dollars that went into this fund, or was it general fund money that went into the fund?
Mr. Chair, members, this money was from a Health Care Access Fund appropriation with matched federal earnings that were deposited into a special revenue fund.
Okay, and then but then those Health Care Access Fund dollars are now going into the general fund.
That's the proposal.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And that's consistent with what was done in
2000. Representative Abler. Thanks, Dan. I'll try to be brief. Just a general question. Now we're talking about little pots of money that are there. We heard about an operations budget you have that you could take $1 million or more of to do this health information exchange thing with the plans, which we generally thought was a reasonable idea. But at some point, I asked how many pots of money and funds you got laying around there. That since you can, your department can find good projects for them, maybe we can find some good projects too. And do it by policy instead of by department. Is there a list of that fund balances in every fund you have, or are they just kind of bookkeeping things that are under administration somewhere?
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Abel, you're welcome.
You have access to all our fund balances. There's no different funds. They're all tracked on the state accounting system, which your analysts have access to. And the next item on the list is State Operating Services Past Due Receivables. These are receivables from the counties for state-operated services that have accumulated over time. What we're proposing is to take the past dues 90 days and above, which is about $2.2 million, and take that. It's currently owed to us by the county, and this would give us a mechanism to collect those funds. The next one will be a familiar one.
Representative
Nice having you here, Representative Wilkinson. Like old times, you know. So just on this county collection thing, which seems like people should pay their bill. I know in Pete they don't have to pay their bill. They just kick them out. Because I worked with that before, that public employees insurance program. Are these the counties not paying? I mean, did they not get a bill? Or are you going to, like, start charging, get a collection agency on them or something if they don't pay? Or what would the practical mechanism be to go after this money that they somehow didn't pay before?
Well, sometimes these are built up because there's a dispute in the payment, and it's a dispute between counties. There's a dispute, the counties are each pointing at each other saying you're the county of origin of the individual. The bulk of this money is even over a year, and our collection is limited right now. If you give us this, we can offset other funds that are going to the county, and that gives us a mechanism to collect it. The next item is county waiver overspending. This was from last year. This is developmental disability allocations that were overspent in four counties during 2004 and 2005. The governor had vetoed these items, but due to technical issues, we were not able to collect those. So we're proposing that those be made collectible on January 2nd of 2009. The next item is regarding adoption assistance. This is more of an adjustment, and it is not a cut to the program. Currently, the appropriation is higher than the forecasted use of it, so we're able to capture the savings in this proposal. Next one is the TANF refinancing and excess MOE proposal. There's three approaches used in this proposal. One is to decrease the fund in the Children and Community Services grant by $21 million and increase TANF appropriation to communities or the social services block grants. The next one decreases the general fund appropriation for MFIT transition year and increases the TANF appropriation for the same. Next one decreases the general fund appropriation for MFIT cash grants and increases TANF for the same. And then we make use of the excess MOE mechanism to reduce or eliminate TANF penalties and bring down our work participation rate so that we can comply more quickly.
Representative Abler.
I wasn't going to ask for a second, but then I perked up. This is what we talked about so much. So there was a bill that we heard last week that the department had no position on. Is that kind of what we talked about, and now the department likes that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, the I believe that's a little bit different. It relates to the same stuff.
Okay.
It's a little different approach, and it's the bill picked up some excess MOE that we can claim for 2007, and we're going to be working with the bill authors to make sure that's in sync with what we ultimately want to do and make sure that we don't miss the window of opportunity for capturing the 2007 MOE.
Thanks. I won't ask you to explain it after we had a long talk about that.
Thank you. I'm not sure.
Representative Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilkin, I'm thinking some of this is child care. That was the MFIP transition year you were talking about. Is that correct? Or where's the child care money in these figures?
It takes the MFIP, yes, takes the MFIP transition year out of the general fund and puts it into TANA.
Which, Mr. Wilkin, which column is that? Is that the 38 or the 11?
It's about $31 million over the course of this biennium.
Is there anything, Mr. Chair?
Representative Love.
Mr. Wilkin, is there anything else related to child care in that, those reductions?
I don't believe so.
The $31 million? Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, it's the refinancing. It doesn't reduce benefits for the program, so it's not a cut to the program.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slower.
We're busy. We have a lot to go through, so we probably won't go through this today, but we know what refinancing does, and we know that that money could go to serve needy people. So we can have a whole hearing on refinancing if we'd like to, but that's what it does.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that, but there are no cuts. You are correct that if you wanted to expand, you could do that with these funds. But considering the budget situation, I think that would be difficult to accomplish. But I'm not arguing with the ability to expand, but I would argue with the ability to, or the characterization of this as a cut program, because it's not.
Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr.
Well, just very briefly, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Reverend Sloat.
You know, a spade is a spade. You got to call it what you call it. But the federal government provides us with these funds to provide funds for people who need child care. So whether you call it that more people would get it, or more people that are on lists would get it, or more people that need it would get it, it's still not serving the people it's intended to serve. I know we're in a difficult fiscal environment. We've done this a number of times, and obviously we're continuing to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Wilson, how will this draw down on the reserves in the TANF fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, this takes the entire fund.
Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that, I mean, we should have a reserve in the TANF fund, especially as our economy dips, because we see caseloads increase. Do you know how you're going to absorb the anticipated caseload increases?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, that's anticipated in the forecast.
I'll
the next item is refinancing of what's called the Transitional Minnesota Care Program. This is about 3 months of service under the GAMC healthcare program, where this group of individuals are ultimately going to be put into Minnesota Care, and that's in current law. And it's just saying that the temporary GAMC for the 1 to 3 months will be paid for out of the Health Care Access Fund rather than the general fund. This is a refinancing. There's no change in benefits or eligibility.
So, again, Representative Haas, what this is doing is taking the Health Care Access Fund money and putting it into the general fund. Commissioner.
The next item is a restructuring of HIV/AIDS grants. This is the proposal that would be in front of you whether we were in a surplus or a deficit situation. The federal government has required us to use our funds in a different manner. There's three sources of funds to this program, state, federal, and drug rebate money. The federal government now requires us to spend down the drug rebate money first, so that leaves a balance of general fund money that can be taken in the first year and used in the second year to fill the hole that would otherwise be created by the lack of drug rebate money in the second year. So it's just changing the order of payments. It does not affect benefits. The next item is restructuring methamphetamine funding. It does take a short-term savings, and the long-term is budget neutral. It takes the funds for the meth center. There's currently no executive director or employees of the meth center, and so this takes that short-term savings and takes the money, and it creates a base in the meth grant. Currently, there's no base in the meth grant, so this takes the $300,000 that's going to the meth center and creates a base funding in the out years for those meth grants.
So, Commissioner, that what I think you're saying is there's really no decrease in the spending on meth treatment. It's just shifting it from one place to another.
Right. It is does move it from the meth center and eliminates that funding for the meth center and puts it into the grant. So there's a policy change there that you need to be aware of, but not just it's budget neutral in the long term. Short term, there's a little bit of difference. The next item is county grant payment delay. This delays the May payment for four grants into July. In 2002, the legislature implemented a permanent delay of the May payment till July for these grants. Subsequent appropriations has led to a small May payment again, and this moves that the entire May payment to match up into July. The next item is the inpatient hospital payment delay. And this also moves the June payment to July. Under current law, there's a fixed dollar amount that's moved from June to July, and this replaces that shift with a current or basically taking the whole payment and moving it from June to July. The next item is an increase in the managed care withhold. So the managed care organizations currently have a 5% withheld from them, and there are some performance criteria. This increases the withhold to 7%, but the performance criteria isn't applied to that 2%, so they'll get the whole thing back. It's more of a cash flow issue.
Could you go over that one more time, Commissioner?
Sure. Currently, with the managed care organizations that we have, there's a 5% withhold from all of them.
Yeah, which is, and then that would normally go be redistributed to them based on their performance.
Based on their performance, correct. Yeah. And there's a minimum amount that's guaranteed to be redistributed to them. This increases the withhold to from 5% to 7%, and they're still guaranteed that additional 2% back. So it's cash flow, there's not a performance element to the next 2%.
Representation.
So how do we get experts on that going into the future then? I was thinking it was like the county thing, the late payment, but maybe it's a little different.
Mr. Chair, members, the savings going into the future is the difference between the first year's delay and the second year's, you know, it's the growth in the program from year to year.
And Mr. Chair, but if they're going to get paid back eventually.
Right. So if the value of the withhold in the first calendar year is $10 million, they get $10 million back the second year. If the value of the withhold the second year is $12 million, your savings, the difference between the $12 million withhold and the $10 million payback. so it's the growth.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Commissioner.
Next item is a delay in inpatient hospital rebasing. It's very simply, it's a one-year delay hospital rebasing.
So that, Commissioner, that was, we had set this rebasing up to start what time and what, how long are we delaying it?
It is being delayed. It's just a one-year delay. I'm looking for my, what day it's on, effective. Okay. It's just a January 1/09 to January 1, 2010 calendar year.
Now, Representative Abler.
And so, since there's no future savings in the system, then when it finally kicks in, then all the money comes through again that would have been paid. The rates jump back up what they would have been. Right? Yeah.
Well, I think it would interact.
The head's nodding behind you, Representative Wilkins. Or can we
pull with the head behind me?
Thanks.
And
Representative Thiessen.
Right. So, and we rebase every how many years? Every 2 years?
Every 2 years.
So would we? Would this be? We're just delaying the rebasing, but we're not moving the date of the rebasing up. Is that right? Does that question make sense? So we'll be 3 years behind instead of 2 years or whatever it is. Okay.
Mr. Chair, so there'd be a 3 year. The last rebasing was January 1/07. It would be January 1, 2010, and then another one would be scheduled for January 1, 2011.
Okay. Thank you.
Next item is nursing home rates, and this eliminates the rebasing that was passed last year, and it builds back a rate increase effective October 1 of 2009. The average of the increase in the rate will be 2%, and that includes a 1.5% across the board that everybody will get, plus a 1.2% quality add-on. For a maximum potential rate, everybody won't get it, but the maximum potential rate would be 2.7, and that will be effective October 1 of 2009.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Representative Huntley and Representative. I'm just not hearing this correctly. Did you say 2009?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
We're delaying a 5% and a 1.2% increase until 2009?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fritz, that those occur at the same time. It's they're in tandem. It's one's the base that everybody gets, and the other is the quality add-on. But it is 2009.
So we get nothing for this term?
That is correct.
And so could you, Representative, could you answer me, how many nursing homes will be closing this year as a result of not receiving any increase?
Commissioner Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any numbers that suggest that there will be closing specifically that related to that. Our analysts might have that information, but I don't have any.
Well, I would like to see that, because I'm hearing a low figure of a dozen and a high figure of 40.
We'd be happy to provide that information for you.
Representative Thiessen.
I thought we had a little bit of rebasing starting this year. Is that not the case?
I don't think the rebasing started yet.
Not this year being this year, but in 08, that is what I meant. I mean, the next.
I think it was scheduled to begin October 1 of 08 and phase in over 8 years.
Right, and so we're taking, that October 108 money is coming back into the general fund, and but nursing homes are not getting any new money until October 109.
That's right.
Okay, so there is a little bit of money that would have gone to them this year, but it won't be.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Abler.
Well, thank you. That clarified one of my questions. And one is a grander one. This is a finance committee, and it's probably a policy decision. But somewhere we decided, policy-wise, it's okay to rebase hospitals and give them, you know, I mean, they're challenged, but at least their costs are somewhere in the range of normal. But these nursing homes never have gotten any kind of consideration like that. And that's a discussion that we always dance around. I mean, but the hospitals get rebased and they lost a year and they're going to say, well, what's the cut? They'll be challenged by that should this become law. But the nursing homes are always, and the last rebasing was like 26% or some big number. I don't remember. We talked about it in the conference committee. But here we are talking about 1.87 and, you know, far below inflation and, you know, people working without insurance. It's a thing, I don't ever go with it today, but we need to figure out some way to do this in a real way, and this rebasing was one way, and another department was concerned about the cost. I'm not, the messenger's at the table, and he's a good messenger, so I'm not going to even criticize him, but it's just it's a policy decision the legislature has made over the years, and it's been I think in reality it's been a bipartisan decision not to do this. So it's just something to think about. Thanks.
Representative Gottwald. Oh, wait a minute. Representative Haas first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Wilson. Here it says that the rebasing would help on 354 facilities if we kept current law. What geographic grouping are those 354 facilities predominantly in?
I don't think we have the staff person here who would have that knowledge.
Mr. Chair, Representative Posh, the facilities that are getting that would get the increases under current law through rebasing are in all geographic groups.
Representative Hodge. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Held, I understand. Is there a certain group that has predominantly more homes? Because, I mean, the issue of rebasing is to try to bring our reimbursement rates up to actual cost. And as we know, there's great disparity among our groups. Mm-hmm. So what area of the state of Minnesota with this increase are we impacting the most? Or with this proposal, are we impacting the most? Is it rural Minnesota? Metro?
Mr. Chair, Representative Posh, we would have to analyze that and get that back.
I'd appreciate that.
And next we have Representative Gottwald and then Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, if we don't take this money here, is there a plan B? I think there's broad nonpartisan support here for not doing this to nursing homes. I would agree, and I realize we have a budget we need to fix, but doing it on the backs of our nursing homes, especially rural ones, I think is pretty tough. I realize we've got, 5.3 in 209 and another 2.7 in 2010 that would need to come out of this, but do you have a plan B? Is there somewhere else we can go for this money?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gottwald, the administration wrestled with this budget for quite a while, and we considered different options, and this one was one of them that we decided to go with. The governor was very interested in adding back a rate increase. We had to increase it in 2009. We do realize that there's a year without an increase there. That has happened in the past. We're not insensitive to the condition of nursing homes and that situation, but ultimately we have to close a $935 million budget gap, and we're happy to work with the legislature on different options to mitigate things that I don't expect the legislature is going to embrace every cut we've proposed, but we're here to work that out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gottwald.
It's my sincere hope that the direction from this committee and the legislature is this is not one of the cuts that we would support.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I just want to make sure I understand. Does this cut also affect those enrolled in the elderly waiver program?
Commissioner.
Stay tuned for the next page, I guess, that's coming up.
Absolutely.
And then one follow-up question, sure. Mr. Chair, thank you. When we were out in Benson this summer, or fall, I guess it was, we had testimony about the quality add-on and that the funding there has been reduced over time. And I'm wondering if the department has contemplated with this proposed cut the interplay between a reduction in resources and the ability for nursing facilities to meet quality standards going forward.
Yeah, we'll get Mr. Helden.
Mr. Helms.
Mr. Chair, Bob Hills, currently Human Services. Could I hear the question again, please?
Representative Murphy.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Helms, thank you. I'm just wondering if you've contemplated the interplay between the cuts that's being proposed and its effect then on the ability of nursing facilities to meet quality measures in order to receive the quality add-on in the future.
Mr. Helms.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, there was not conversation about that to my recollection.
Commissioner.
Yeah, the next item is long-term care COLA. This is a one-year delay in the COLA, often referred to as a longer list of different providers, and this delays that COLA 1 year.
Commissioner, is... We're delaying the nursing homes 1 year also, right? I mean, the COLA that they were going to get.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Well, in the previous section, you were talking about nursing facilities, and you were going to delay for 1 year the rebasing, but you were also then going to give them a COLA in the second year, or 2009.
Mr. Chairman, the nursing facility proposal eliminates the rebasing. In the second year, it replaces what had been the rebasing with the COLA.
Okay, so you're not cutting the nursing home COLA that we already... Okay, and so my next question then is, why are you cutting the long-term care folks, but not cutting the nursing home folks, since they provide similar services but to different age groups?
Mr. Chairman, if you look at the effect, it is they're being treated equally. In 09, they're not getting their COLA. The long-term care providers, the COLA is delayed a year. When you take the other package for the nursing facilities, it's eliminating the rebasing and putting a COLA not in 2009 or 2008, it's putting it in 2009. So there's no COLA for either of them in 2008. So they are being treated equally.
I'm going to have to go sit in a dark closet and think about this.
We'll talk. The next item on the list,
Representative Gottwald, you going to join me in the closet?
I may be joining you. Mr. Chair, I was afraid to go there, and in fact, now I'm coming out of the closet. But, the 1.87% increase, that is not happening. The way you've got it worded here says this proposal would delay a 2% rate increase for all long-term care providers excluding nursing facilities from July 1, 08 to July 1, 09.
I wasn't following along on the same list. I
haven't. Mr. Chair and members, last year a 2% rate increase was given in fiscal year 08 for all providers, nursing home and long-term care providers. In fiscal year 09, a 2% rate increase was given for long-term care providers except nursing homes. Nursing homes were given rebasing effective in fiscal year 2009. These proposals together would delay rate increases in fiscal year 09 for nursing homes, which was rebasing, and for long-term care, other long-term care providers, which is a 2% COLA, would freeze their rates, so no rate increase in 09. In 10, the non-nursing home providers would get the 2% rate increase that was scheduled for 9. For nursing homes, instead of rebasing, they would get a COLA plus a quality rate adjustment in 10 in lieu of rebasing that was scheduled for 9. could have a chart.
Commissioner.
Yes. The next item is reducing the fee-for-service pharmacy reimbursement, and this takes the pharmacies from the current average wholesale price minus 12% to average wholesale price minus 14%. We believe this brings our rates, the rates that we take, closer to commercial markets, which are more in the line of average wholesale price minus 16%, and we also pay a higher dispensing fee than the private market is paying right now. There is some, you should know, there is some interaction. You can't compare the rates directly because there's the provider taxes factored into the private rates. The next item is a one-year freeze in the substance abuse treatment rate. Next item is elimination of the inpatient hospital supplemental payment. This payment has not yet been approved by CMS. It has not been approved or disapproved. And this proposal also builds back rate increases for Bethesda and Gillette Children's Hospital. The next item is...
Commissioner, what you're saying is except for those two hospitals, we had passed something last year that would have given them an increase, but it has not been approved by the feds yet, or disapproved. We're withdrawing that attempt to, okay.
Exactly. The next item is a freeze of Mendo waiver services. The Mendo enrollment will...
Yeah, just a minute. Representative Thiessen.
Just on that one, so you're taking savings on the future on that one instead of the one-time, on the inpatient supplemental payment?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, would there... If we were to delay implementation of it, could we still go and see if we could get a decision on the waiver?
Yeah, the we haven't withdrawn that at all. This is a proposal to withdraw the supplemental payment. It hasn't been approved yet, so nothing's out the door. So you can capture savings.
And Mr. Chair, and that part I'm getting, but you're taking the savings in the future, so I'm assuming what you're expecting is that waiver, that we won't proceed to go get that, to see if we could get the waiver.
That's
and,
correct.
And all I'm asking is if we were to take the one-year savings and delay the implementation of that supplemental, whether we would could still pursue the waiver and see if it's possible.
I would think so. I don't see anything that would stand in the way of that.
Right there.
The next item is the freeze in Mendo waiver services. It still allows enrollment in Mendo for basic care services. It just would not include the waiver services. And we get a small savings from that.
So that's basically a cap on the number of people allowed in that program.
On the waiver side, yeah. The next item is the repeal of the transitional MA Minnesota Care coverage for children. This is an item that hasn't been implemented yet. It's basically the expansion you're well familiar with, I think, on the health side. The next item is the elimination of the outreach incentive program. It doesn't take the entire outreach, but it does take the incentive payment, which is the $20 payment that's paid to organizations that help people sign up. It's important to understand that this does not impact eligibility or current enrollees.
In the previous item, you said there's 20,000 fewer children enrolled. And in this one, do you know the number of people that we thought were going to be enrolled but won't be if we don't fund this?
Yeah, that would be about 10,000.
10,400.
Continue.
The next item is the repeal of the scheduled increase in Minnesota Care Adults Without Children from 200 to 20% of federal poverty guidelines.
And again, how many people would we have expected to be in this program?
990.
Mr. Chair. Representative Flowers.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Wilkin, Commissioner Wilkin, this is the part that gets tricky here. You know, when Commissioner Hansen was before the Finance Committee yesterday, he used the line that you used, does not impact eligibility or, what was the rest of that line, current?
Current enrollment.
Current enrollment.
This one does impact eligibility, so there's an eligibility expansion that's not happening. But to that extent, since it hasn't been implemented yet, nobody's losing that's on the program already. So it doesn't affect current enrollment.
I think, Mr. Chair, I just have to take a second on this. I had asked the commissioner about that in finance, and he gave that response, and I turned to Representative Dean, and I said, really? Does it really not affect? And he said, well, what it does is just what you said. I mean, it all the good things, all the people, all the children we tried to help last year, you just said no, right? So the last three items, you're basically anything that we tried to expand, I would say these three programs, if we tried to work, you just have decided to, in the name of budget cuts, that it was strategic to eliminate those?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallach, it was a preferred method to eliminate potential enrollment rather than going after the current enrollment. We wanted to protect current enrollees and eligibility.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wallach.
And I think that's a good idea, to protect current enrollees, but also, you know, the intent of the legislature. We finally had money for about 12 months. We actually got to do some things. I just encourage us all to think about what that really means in terms of eligibility. I mean, these were people that need to be served, people that deserve to be served, and we're just not going to do it. And we know the next couple of years look pretty bleak, so pretty much I think it puts these folks out of the picture for the long term. But I know it's all a matter of crafting and it's all a matter of words, but members, I hope we think about what we're really doing here, is we're not carrying out the intentions of the good work we tried to do last year. Thank you.
Representative Slavik, Minnesota County used to have about 145,000 people in it, and it got down to about 118,000. And what we did last year would have moved it back up to about 150. So if we go through with these cuts, we won't be back up there, and working folks won't have health insurance.
Exactly.
Representative Thiessen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just on the repeal of the medical assistance and automatic Minnesota care coverage, and I don't think this committee really knows much about what that is, because that was actually something that came up new in the conference committee. It wasn't even the Senate or the House proposal. And basically, members, what that does is we have people on Minnesota on medical assistance, kids, and then they get to 150% of poverty, which is the income out level, and they're dropped from the program, have to reapply for Minnesota care, and then and if they in fact do reapply and get through that process, which takes a couple months, then they can get on Minnesota care. And so basically we're going through all the administrative costs of having people drop out and get re-enrolled, something we're trying to avoid doing. What this did is it just smoothed that process so that people transferring out because of income across from MA to Minnesota care would stay in the system and have continuous coverage going forward. And as you can see, it's, you know, 15,000 or 20,000 kids that just because, and these are the kids that everybody talks about that they want to cover. It's the folks that are currently qualified for our program. You know, we hear all the rhetoric about that's where we ought to focus our efforts initially, including rhetoric from the governor and from the President Bush on down. So it seems to me that if people are being true to their rhetoric, this is something, a direction we ought not go in. And I would also point out that there's a bunch of money, that's health care access fund money, that, you know, $250 billion being taken by the governor for the general fund. So just so people know what that program is, though.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, Representative Thiessen kind of made my point at the end there. I just wanted to say in response to Representative Flawick, as we talk about this and we say, oh, aren't we in terrible budget trouble? We can't do these things with Minnesota Care that we want to do, let's remember the money's actually there to do it. It's only if the in the governor doesn't want to do it because he wants to take that money, which is money is taxes that are being paid specifically for that purpose and use it for other things. So I just want to give that frame to our discussion here.
Commissioner.
The last item is managing waiver growth under the CBI and CADI waivers. This puts some growth limitations in place. We have worked through the past two bienniums with more stringent waiver limits, and this helped us grab some savings by doing a little, I guess, gentler waiver limit. It also builds back a housing supplement so that it allows people with disabilities the same housing allowance they would otherwise receive in a DRH-eligible setting to live in their own home.
Commissioner, could you get us the number of people on the waiting list for those two programs?
Yes, you can do that.
Representative Houston here. Thank you. And I always just forget how this. So, how does what this proposal is compare? Well, what are current waiver caps, and then how does this? Would this change that, or do we end those kind of on an annual basis, and we're just extending those? Can someone just talk about that briefly?
Prior waiver caps expired at the end of 2007. This is reinstating similar caps, but at a higher level, not as strict as they have in the past.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner.
That concludes my portion of the testimony. We stand ready to work with you to come up with a package, but we have a budget to balance, and we're eager to entertain your ideas of alternatives to some of the things in our package that you might not like as much as others, but obviously we're going to have to do a good number of them.
Any further questions for Commissioner Wilson? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Could you talk, one of the pieces, one of the large number items that you had talked about in here that that I didn't understand and I wanted to come back to if we had time, was the protection of general assistance medical care. Can you talk about where that money comes from?
GAMC, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, GAMC is like MA, it's funded out of the general fund.
But in, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, you talked about the movement of that money, or the proposal would shift funding for the DAMC for months of coverage from the general fund to the healthcare access fund. Could you talk about that process a little bit?
Commissioner.
Currently,
it's on page 3 of 6.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, currently in this program, there's a group of GAMC enrollees who are enrolled in Minnesota. It's transitional Minnesota Care. So ultimately, they're transitioning to Minnesota Care anyway. Over a 6-month period, the first month, 3 months, is paid for through GAMC and general fund money. The next portion is paid for by healthcare access money. This just says pay for the whole thing with healthcare access money.
Thank you. I just was curious as to the fund source, and we had talked about the use of that money and where it was going, and that was just one of those pieces. But you know, this is a difficult thing for anybody to do. We have to cut this amount of money out to make a budget, and if any one of us tried to do it, or any group of us tried to do it, it wouldn't be very fun, and we could criticize it. Obviously, there's three things that we can do. We can cut, we can shift, or we can raise taxes. Obviously, the emphasis that was put forward by the department and the governor was to maintain eligibility, and I think that that's a good way to move forward, I think, with unpredictable economic times. But also, we've been here in the past. I've seen this done in the short time that I've been here. It'll probably be done in the future. But to be productive in moving forward,
I think that we're going to have to put our own ideas on the table, and there probably is going to be no less painless in one area or another. So I appreciate the work that you did.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. And next is Lisa Mueller.
It's Miller, actually, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Lisa Miller from the Department of Finance. I am here to testify on the governor's final recommendation. The governor is recommending a transfer of $250 million from the Health Care Access Fund to the general fund in fiscal year 2009. This transfer would occur at the end of the fiscal year on June 30th. This transfer, along with other proposals in the governor's budget, would leave a remaining balance in the Health Care Access Fund of $51.6 million in fiscal year 2009 and a projected balance in fiscal year 11 of $77.3
million. Questions? Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure you can answer this one. I mean, we get it from the number standpoint, but can you enlighten us on the philosophical standpoint of taking money from this fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawick, I would just reiterate some of the points that have been already made in terms of the governor wanted to protect current eligibility and benefits in this budget. And some difficult decisions had to be made in terms of balancing a fairly substantial but manageable deficit, and this is one of the recommendations that he's making.
Well, Representative Slawick, as we all know, this provider tax was sold to the public as a way to fund health insurance for working families that didn't get it where they work. And obviously the governor proposes to not live up to that argument that was used when we passed this in 92. Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony, and but I will agree these are tough times, and there's going to be a lot of pain going around. Representative Dean, would you move the minutes from March 5th? And we spelled your name on there, right? So, all those in favor of the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Just before we leave, I would say that the governor's proposal has 56% of his cuts coming out of the Health and Human Services budget, and we have a third of the state budget, so we're getting close to twice the cuts of everybody else. The meeting is adjourned.